Hello, SestraCast listeners. This is Jean with a short message before we get going with this episode. As you may know, SestraCast is a member of the amazing Incomparable Network. And right now, it's the annual Incomparable membership drive, and we'd like to encourage you to support SestraCast by becoming a member. Here's what you do. Go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up and make a monthly or annual pledge. You'll then be asked to pick the shows on the network you'd like to support. If you check the box for SestraCast, your entire contribution will come to us after a few fees are taken out. If you listen to other podcasts on the Incomparable Network, you can also check their boxes and your contribution will be shared equally. Kathy and I just released an exclusive members-only commentary track for the very first episode of Orphan Black. So if you rewatch that episode and play the audio of our commentary track, it's like having us in front of your TV watching with you. There are lots of great shows on The Incomparable. As a member, you'll have access to special episodes and bonus audio for all of them. And there's a members-only Slack community where we have our very own chapter of Clone Club. So contributions start at $5 a month. Just go to theincomparable.com/members for details. Thanks for your patience, and let's get back to our regularly scheduled show. Welcome to SestraCast, the Orphan Black podcast. I'm Jean McDonald, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Kathy Campbell. Hey, Kathy, how's it going?
Hi, Jean. It's going pretty good. We'll see how I feel at the end of this episode.
Yeah, we've really both been laid low lately with the general illness of the year. Everybody seems to be getting something. And I may even lose my voice. So if you hear a lot of Kathy in this podcast, you'll know why. More than usual, let's say. I am so excited that we made it to the end of season two.
Me too. And man, what a good episode.
Oh my God, yes. So season two, episode 10, that's our episode we're discussing today, which is called By Means Which Have Never Been Tried. And that sounds ominous, and it is. There's almond.
Yes.
There's almond in this word. There's amenity in this episode. There's also some fun stuff. There's a payoff at the end. I think it's one of the most perfect season finales I've ever seen because it brings a lot of stuff together, answers questions. It has a cliffhanger, but it's not a cliffhanger that you go, oh, now everything I know to this point has been thrown into question. Well, almost everything is still okay. I don't know.
Yeah. But that's something that Orphan Black does really well at the end of their seasons. Granted, I've only seen two season finales, so it's hard to make a general ruling over it all. But for the most part, it's really like it has a way of feeling complete without, while still making you want to, oh my goodness, I can't wait until the next episode comes through, but it's not like, oh my gosh, I'm dying type of an it's so beautifully done.
I agree. And I think, you know, the last few minutes of this episode are shocking and beautiful simultaneously for a lot of reasons. So we'll get to that. But there's also, there's a payoff. There's a reward for getting this far. And we will get to that point as we discuss the episode. But it is a classic moment of Orphan Black lore. And I'm glad it was in season two because I was dying to discuss it with you all these 20 episodes. So anyway, we've mulled over how to organize this episode and try to do it. You know, we usually try to do it by storylines or clones or whatever, but we finally decided this episode just goes back and forth too much and everything is intertwined with everything else. So we're pretty much just going to start at the beginning and run down what happens and, you know, as you see it on screen and and so we can get to the end with everybody in every storyline all together.
Right. Where it all comes together.
Yeah. But and the opening is a very unusual Orphan Black opening, I would say, because it ostensibly it's Sarah in, you know, an undisclosed location, which we know is Dyad pretty much because they're trying to, you know, ask her all these lab rat questions that they always ask the clones.
Well, for the you say that, but I didn't know it was Dyad until after the credits,
okay.
Until the next part.
Okay, because interesting.
The way they did it, yeah. It made it seem like it was a flashback, like it was something that had happened before, because it's interspersed with Sarah is furious that Kira is gone. Felix is heartbroken because he let Rachel take her.
Yeah.
But ultimately, they're all three, Sarah, Mrs. S, and Felix, are just so scared that they are reacting in the way that they emotionally react to. Like, that's just the way it does. But it's interspersed with the way that the flashbacks have happened in previous episodes, like when Sarah was recognizing that somebody was coming in and getting blood and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so I was like, what, is she in jail? Like,
oh, interesting.
Because I couldn't, she's never really had an age.
Yeah.
Like, all of the past things have all, she's all looked like Sarah. So she didn't really have any age changing. There's no major hairstyles, no major any of that, et cetera, et cetera. But it wasn't until, like, after the credits, when the guy comes in.
Yeah. The doctor.
When the doctor comes in and mentions something about how they thought that she was Beth, that I realized it was Dyad.
Yeah. That's
even when Sarah is being videotaped giving unconditional surrender while handcuffed.
Yeah.
It didn't click that, oh, obviously she's surrendering to Dyad. I was like, what is she surrendering for? So I don't know if that was because I was getting sick and just wasn't feeling as smart or what when I watched it. But yeah, it was a really interesting way to tease the audience.
Oh, yeah. That's why I really like watching these with you because, you know, I've forgotten at this point, you know, sometimes I've forgotten what it was I thought. And I mean, this scene was still very captivating, especially ending on the line where Sarah says, my name is Sarah Manning and this is my unconditional surrender. Like, what is she talking about? You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, the credits roll and this creepy new doctor who we haven't seen before, Dr. Nealon, comes in and he asks her to sign something so they can harvest her eggs. And I'm like, and she does. She doesn't even read it, of course, because why would you? I was thinking, what does unconditional surrender mean except that you're going to sign whatever they put in front of you?
Right.
And at the same time, they're showing a nurse in with Kira in the special little girl's bedroom at Dyad where Kira is being held captive. And that's a great little scene because the nurse is asked to swab her mouth for, you know, cheek cells to DNA test. And Kira's like, nope. And the nurse is like, it won't hurt. It's just cotton. And then Kira's like, okay. And you think, oh, Kira, she's so accommodating. But what she actually does is while the nurse is swabbing her mouth, Kira steals the nurse's cell phone. And she calls Cal because we know Cal had made her memorize a number to call him.
Yes.
And so you knew that was going to eventually happen. That's not, you know, something they throw into the dialogue just for fun.
Right. Right. I mean, that's a pretty obvious, like,
but yeah,
this is going to make a difference in the future.
Yeah.
But of course, it's Kira and she's amazing. So of course she's going to call.
Yeah, I loved that little scene just as she slipped the cell phone. I, Because I remember that she made a call, but I couldn't remember how she got a phone. yeah, so everything more or less in this episode, a lot of it is anyway, taking place at Dyad. But there's, you know, different settings at Dyad. So there's the Sarah under siege setting. There's Kira in her room. And then there's Cosima's lab. And there's that creepy assistant Martin who is in there and he's taking the bone marrow cells. Cosima's like, wait, we just processed those. And he's talking about Dr. Nealon is your new doctor. And, you know, Cosima and Scott are like, what about Delphine?
So what about Delphine? Well, Delphine is getting moved to Frankfurt. Rachel is going full on dictator and not caring about the other clones or the fact that Delphine loves Cosima and Cosima loves Delphine is just like, you need to get Delphine out of the system because obviously we can't trust her. So then we go back to the lab and Cosima, my heart was breaking. Every scene with Cosima was really hard to watch because she's on oxygen and she's just doesn't have that energy and life that she normally has as a character. Mm-hmm. And I think that's partially why they had her be the one that got sick, because in all of the previous episodes, she's always been so vibrant. Mm-hmm. And so the dichotomy between the two versions of Cosima is so vivid when you see her so weak. Yeah. So she's sitting on the couch or on her bed. And she gets an email from Eskimo Pie, which I thought was really cute.
Yeah, Eskimo Pie. I forgot about that.
And it's Delphine saying that it's all up to her, that it's all up to Cosima. Yeah. So
I also got real verklempt when Delphine, you know, when Rachel says to Delphine, it's not personal. And Delphine says, I love her. And if you let her die without me, it is personal.
Yes.
Oh. Oh, that's why we love Delphine and Cosima together.
Yeah, which is not how I thought I would react in the first episodes between them all. But Delphine knows that Sarah and Kira are there and so passes on the plan. Oh, and Delphine sent Cosima the itinerary for Rachel. So they know where Rachel's going to be. Not the itinerary, but the actual calendar. Mm-hmm. So they can see what her day is planned out, mm-hmm. which is good because that helps plan in the future to get everyone out.
Yeah. So then the reason that Sarah has gone into this, you know, unconditional surrender mode is because they have Kira and all she wants is her daughter back. So she's saying, you know, I'll sign something, but then I have to see my daughter. And so they say, okay, we'll take you to your daughter. You know, you'll get to see her. And they mean literally see her, not hang out with her. And I was like, that's a mean trick, but whatever. Sarah gets to see Kira through a two-way mirror into her little girly bedroom. And while she's watching, Rachel comes into the bedroom to talk to Kira, very manipulative, saying like, don't you get sad when your mommy runs away and your mommy has hurt me. And, you know, she's trying to manipulate Kira's affections.
Because she asks, you know, where's mommy? When's mommy coming, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, we don't know. So they're playing on those abandonment fears from when she was younger even. And really adding that hype so that Rachel can be the new mommy and the savior of... Yeah, because she'll be there and she'll always be there and she's never going to abandon you. She's never going to leave you, et cetera, which is so manipulative.
It was mean.
So mean.
When Rachel says, even mothers have to do as they're told sometimes, don't they? And at that moment, she's looking out the two-way mirror and she knows Sarah's on the other side looking in. And just the framing of that scene, I mean, the creepiness of it plus the symbolic, you know, it's a mirror. So they're both looking into a mirror. They can't see. I mean, Sarah can see Rachel, but Rachel can't actually see Sarah. But they're the same person, right? So they're looking into a mirror, literally.
Right.
So, yeah, that was, I didn't think you would like that.
It was so mean.
So the next scene is at Mrs. S's house, and she's on the phone doing her Mrs. S things, you know, talking about car bombs. The usual Mrs. S, the good terrorist. And there's a knock at the door, and it's Cal. And I put a little heart in my notes. I love Cal. I just love him. He's in a new movie, by the way. Yeah, that.
Oh, nice.
Guernsey and Jersey Potato Peeler Society movie. Anyway, I'll put a link into the show notes for it. But he's the love interest, Cal Surprise.
Oh, so shocked.
So Cal offers to give his research on Dyad, you know, and work with Mrs. S. And meanwhile, Felix gets a clone phone call, and it's Art, and he says, I found someone here in my apartment when I came home. She's eating. So, and you see her with like a box of, I don't know, cereal or whatever. And
cereal of some sort. It almost looked like Honey Bunches of Oats, but not really. I don't know. I'm sure it's some generic prop made so they didn't have to, unless, you know, they did get sponsorship. It's hard to say. Who knows?
And you hear, you know, she yells over the phone, hello, sister brother. Hello,
yeah,
sister.
That was so cute. I love that.
So, yeah. So, and Mrs. S is like, you know, whispering to Felix, you know, away from Cal, you go there, don't let her out of your sight, you know.
So now we're going to flash back to Dyad from one of few scenes where we're not at the Dyad Institute. And Sarah is coming back from signing away basically her eggs and saying hi to Kira, even though obviously she's not actually saying hi to her, but seeing that she is alive and being treated humanely, if not well. And as she gets to the elevator, Duncan is coming off, and he's like, he's being escorted, quote unquote, escorted, and is like, don't despair, my dear, don't despair. Which I'm like, okay, so he must be going to see his daughter, probably in that fancy room that she goes to watch the videos.
Yeah, and he's wearing scrubs, like Sarah's wearing scrubs. So it's not like a normal office visit. He looks like they're going to experiment on him, even, you know.
Yeah, for sure. It'll be, you can tell that he's a prisoner.
And if I hear somebody say, don't despair, I'm like, uh-oh. I better despair.
Yeah. And so now we move away from Sarah again, and poor Art's apartment. Helena is telling, it's because Art's Art's apartment has become a disaster area as Helena grazes through like a dog looking for the next snack. I mean, there's food everywhere. And Helena is telling Art and Felix all about her boyfriend and how happy she was. And Art is trying to ask about the fire. And Felix goes, did you burn down the fish people's ranch? And Helena says no, but has that evil smile on her face, which is so funny. Absolutely hilarious. It just like,
yeah,
it was so Helena. It was very, this was very much a Helena episode or like section where she is the epitome of who she is as a character. And it's really nice to see her coming back because for the last couple times we've seen her, she's been very depressed or drugged or all of these things. So it's nice to see that captivity did not affect her negatively.
Right. And she mentions, like, after my heart was broken, meaning, you know, splitting up with Jesse, I became roommates to a very good girl. And that's referring to Gracie. And then we see a real quick bit with Mark and Gracie. They're on the road. They escaped from the Fish People's Ranch at the same time as Helena did. And they have a little discussion about whether Gracie says, am I a sinner, you know, that I'm happy my father is dead. And Mark's like, no, he deserved it. And Mark talks about how, you know, they're a family now together, including the baby that Gracie is carrying, even though that baby is the genetic product of Helena and Henrik, but whatever. So we know Mark and Gracie are on the road, and, you know, their relationship is kind of maturing now that they're away from the ranch and away from
their parents. And away from, Mark is away from the basically controlling factor of his life, because he did pretty much whatever Henrik did, like needed him to do, and barely answered or like barely questioned anything. So then we go back to Mrs. S's house, and Cal shows this very complicated like breakdown of
mind map
of dyad groups' holdings and what belongs to who and where money comes from and all of this, and tells them that someone from dyad is trying to has tried to hack Cal. And we know he is a very talented technology guru, so the fact that someone was trying to hack him and was kind of successful was pretty impressive. But then they learn that there's somebody on the inside. Someone contacts him, and Mrs. S is there and is like, tell them I'm here. I didn't write down the exact quotes, but.
Yeah. She says, tell them, you know, you're with me, Siobhan Sadler. And I liked how Cal didn't know how to spell Siobhan.
Yeah.
Siobhan, for those who don't know, has a B-H in the middle. It's not a V. Because
it's obviously Irish. And it also says to mention Castor, which immediately triggers, oh, this is a good sign. They know what this is. And they know who Mrs. S is. And so they can, you know, make that connection.
Cal is confused, and Mrs. S just looks at him and says, oh, you don't know your mythology. And that's all she says. But we know our mythology. Castor was one of the sons of Leda, the swan impregnated woman. You know, this Leda was visited by Zeus in the form of a swan. And Leda, of course, is the name of Sarah's batch of clones, and now we have this new name, Castor, and we don't know what it, you know, portends, but we have a feeling something interesting is going to happen.
I know the myth, but I could not figure out what they meant by Castor. I was just like, but why? And obviously it comes to light later on. But yeah, it was so smart. So they pull up into this gigantic warehouse, and a big Humvee comes out. And who do we see? My boyfriend's back, and you're gonna be in trouble. Because Paul hops out looking very nice in his military fatigues.
Very hot.
And you learn that he is a major in the military.
So Paul is still Mrs. S's contact. And so basically you have Cal with his yet unknown person inside of Dyad. And they're going to work out a deal with Mrs. S's contact, who is Paul, now, you know, very high up in the military, some secret military project.
So now we go back to Duncan, who's watching the video of Rachel as a young girl and her mom. And Rachel comes in with a tea tray, very British. And
he's reading Dr. Moreau to Rachel.
Little Rachel. Yeah. So they having this very sweet video, and Rachel is prepping tea. Duncan asked for just hot water because he brought his own tea bag, which immediately triggered my red flags. I knew that was going to be impactful. And so they're talking. Rachel wants her dad to give the entire sequence, not just to cure Cosima, but to unlock the ability to reproduce. And Duncan's not having it. And instead, he's drinking his tea and asks if Rachel remembers love. And just this whole really deep conversation about love and how Rachel doesn't remember it because she's turned into this monster of a person who's pretty much been reprogrammed by Dyad and Dr. Leakey and the world that she grew up in. And in the background, you see his hands start to shake in the teacup, and then it drops as he falls over, and very obviously it's poison. He's dead, so that no one can have the cipher. No one has the key to the cipher.
Right. He's told her it was in his head. He tells her, he tells her he can't let her create more clones. That's, so I guess he's learned his lesson. I mean, it's a very short coming to Jesus moment at the end for him. But as he's dying, her face, the acting that is going on with Tatiana Maslany, because I always forget that Rachel is Tatiana.
Yeah.
Right? And she's like, don't leave me again. She's screaming and he says, I'm afraid you don't deserve me anymore.
That's so harsh.
It's pretty harsh.
And so after that emotional scene, let's pop over to the hotness that is Paul. So a limo pulls up with whom I'm guessing is Cal's inside man. And Mrs. S is just looking between Cal and Paul and just like, look at the two of you. I don't know how she does it, which is so funny.
It's one of the best lines. And the two of them.
Because they're both, G.I. Joe and Mountain Man Ken together. And just delicious is the only word for it. So Paul climbs into the limo and it's Marion Bowles. So Marion is the inside man. Paul hands over this red folder with information about Castor, I'm guessing. But obviously, we don't know what that information is or what's going to be done with it or any of that. It's obviously something very important that Marion wants.
Then we're back with Kira, right? And Cosima is in Kira's room.
Yes. Which made me so happy.
Yeah. There's sweet auntie-niece couple. And we didn't talk too much about it, but when Cosima from Delphine saying, it's all you, she switched her tune immediately. She was arguing with that guy, Martin, about them taking away the stem cells and about her having a new doctor. And she said, no, tell Dr. Nealon, I'll be happy to meet him. Like she got all, cooperative all of a sudden. And she said, I also want to see Kira. I think it would be a nice gesture. So that's how she got in to see Kira. It wasn't just random. So Cosima's with Kira and she says, you want to do some science? This is the best.
She's like, it was so cute.
I figured you'd love this. Yeah. So she says, try pushing the pencil through the paper, And so Cosima's holding a sheet of paper and Kira's trying to punch the pencil through the paper, but it's not really working because there's, not enough force. And that's when Cosima explains to Kira what force is, mass times acceleration. It's really funny. But in the meantime, they're cutting the scenes with Cosima and Scott in the lab, and they're building something. You can't tell exactly what, but there's a fire extinguisher involved, and there's like some kind of tube, and I don't know.
What did you think? It looks complicated.
It looks complicated. And she's sharpening a pencil, which...
Right. And that's where I was like, okay, they're going to use this as a weapon of some sort. Because there's no reason that they would have this science experiment with Kira not be related to what they're doing with that. But I didn't know who or when or...
No, it's not. It's
yeah, you have no idea, of course. You have no idea.
But, you know, when Cosima explains to Kira how force works and how maybe if she makes a pencil sharpener and she... maybe if she makes a pencil sharper... And uses more speed to punch the paper, she'll be able to punch a hole through it, which she does. And then the best, where Cosima goes like, "You won the experiment.
You won science." I love that so much. It was so cute.
Yeah. So, and then she says, "Hey, you want to make a picture for your mom?" Which I know when I first saw it, I wasn't really that suspicious, but about what was the picture about. But we see coming up in a bit where the picture has a role to play. Meanwhile, over in the lab, showing Cosima and Scott working on this contraption, but Cosima is literally like she's losing all of her ability to, you know, walk. She's kind of falling down, and Scott is like, "This is not going to work." So I guess the plan was Cosima would take this contraption and use it. But Scott says, he says, "Let me do your part. I can do it." You know, and I'm like, yay, Scott. He was so good. He's so good in this one.
Yeah, it was. I was so happy with his character. You know, before it was kind of like, oh, blah, blah, blah. But... it was so great. It was so good. Mm-hmm. Because now we're back in, I mean, we're still in Dyad, but we're going to pop over to Sarah.
Right.
So you see Sarah strapped down in a gurney, and there's some sort of medical procedure. I'm guessing they're going to try and get eggs based on what she signed earlier and what they talked about. Even though that's not how that works, you can't
so she's strapped into a gurney and just brought into an operating room. And Scott is there in scrubs, you know, so his face is hidden. And he goes like, "Hey," Cosima says, "Hey, we'll get you out of here." And he rolls their little contraption over next to her bed. And Dr. Nealon comes in and he says... So they're not harvesting eggs. They're performing an oophorectomy.
Oh, that's right.
A word that I did not know before Orphan Black, but it is a word.
Yes.
And it means, you know, removing an ovary or both ovaries, I suppose. It's different from the word ovariectomy, which is used when discussing animals. But in a human, it's called an oophorectomy from, you know, Greek words, egg bearing and, you know, cut out. But I love the sound of that word. I don't love it. It's scary. It sounds scary to me. When I didn't even know what it was the first time when I watched this, and I'm like, I think I know what he's talking about, right? Because that word has that double O sound in it. But and Sarah's like, "What is that?" And he says, "Oh, we're removing one of your ovaries for research," which was not the deal,
right?
And he says, "You know, we don't want to render you infertile. We hope you look forward to a future pregnancy as much as we do." And it's like, oh, he's so creepy. It's so creepy. And
The whole thing. Yeah.
And then to like, you know, to just roll in the more creep and evil into it, Rachel comes in and says, "I'd like a second to speak to my sister, please." And that's, you know, that's not where I want to be. Vis-a-vis Rachel is strapped to an operating table.
Yeah.
So she's trying to get the sequences from, you know, for the encrypted sequences for the cloning. She figures that Duncan gave them to Sarah, and which he didn't. And so Sarah's like, "I don't even know what you're talking about." And meanwhile, Sarah's noticing like the little contraption from Scott and Cosima. Plus, there's a photo.
Plus, there's a drawing that Kira made that is actually kind of the instructions for using it. And it was very sneaky that they did that. But meanwhile, you know, Rachel doesn't believe Sarah. She doesn't know about the sequence and its encryption. And she's holding the test tubes with the bone marrow in it. And she just, you know, she's like, I'm threatening you. If you don't tell me, I'm going to do something with these. And Sarah really honestly is like, I don't know. I don't have them. And Rachel just smashes them on the ground. It's like, no, you know, after everything they went through to get that those bone marrow stem cells, Rachel smashes them on the ground and stamps on them with her high heels. It's like, come on. She's so mad.
She's so mad.
And she's mad because, she's mad and she's crazy because of what Duncan did, you know, which was keep the sequence from her and also kill himself. So she's on the warpath. And they don't say it, but I think that's why they're even having an oophorectomy, is it's punishment. You know, it's like a threat.
Yeah, because they're going to use the ovary to probably see if they can figure out how to fix Rachel.
Yeah. Well, so Sarah, you know, is shocked, but still she doesn't know the answer. And Rachel looks at her, one of the creepiest lines I think ever written for television, enjoy your oophorectomy. Like, okay.
Right.
That was terrible. And that's when Sarah says, wait, I'll tell you, because she sees that she has this weapon by her.
And she finally figured it out, put it together.
And then, don't you want to tell this part, or is it too creepy?
So you've had this discussion of pencil and force and all of that combined, and the fire extinguisher, when Sarah squeezes it, at the end, out comes not the lovely cloud of foam meant to put out a fire, but a pencil that drives directly straight into Rachel's eyeball. Mm-hmm. Which was pretty intense.
Yeah.
You know, forgetting the whole like aiming and angling, and we're gonna ignore that plausible deniability.
Yeah.
All of that. Wow.
Yeah.
That. Whew. Sounds terrible.
Yeah. That's gonna hurt.
Yes.
And it's not going to get better right away. So you better steel yourself up for some eye problems in the future. Right. Just saying. Not a spoiler alert, because obviously
there's going to be some issues. So how does she get unstrapped?
She had unstrapped one of her arms, so she could do the fire extinguisher. And so she unstraps herself. She has a badge that Scott gave her. And so she runs out to go find Kira. And she gets to Kira's little room. And Marion Bowles is there. The room's open. And Marion is saying, oh, I was just going to come and get you. You're free to leave. You don't have to run. But you're going to have questions and you're going to want to come meet me tomorrow.
Just so ominous.
Yeah. To which I felt like, I know it's a weird thing to think, but I'm like, but they just escaped, you know, like, can't they have the fun of totally escaping? Like,
no,
everything
of course
that
not.
They did, like, making the, they didn't have to make the fire extinguisher. They didn't even have to shoot Rachel in the eye, maybe. Even as much as I hate Rachel, that's still pretty, pretty horrible. So, whatever. They get out. It's like, kind of like you're close to winning the game and then somebody gives you the key. Or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Not a big deal, but I'm glad they got out. And the next scene is at Felix's apartment. And Cal is there. He's in the apartment with all the Sestras, and he's like saying goodbye to them. And so he's finally met all the clones. He knew there were clones, but he hadn't met any of them. And he goes out into the hallway and he's talking to Sarah. you know, she's thanking him. He's saying, don't thank me. You know, I didn't do it for thanks. I did it for, and we never hear what he was going to say because Sarah kisses him and they're smooching. And then Felix comes up the stairs and he says, oh, hello, steamy potatoes.
Which was so funny. I love that as like a descriptor. Yeah.
And Felix says, you know, basically, I hope you're not hanging out with us tonight. And Cal is saying, well, it's a clones only night. And Felix says, yeah, that includes me, which is true. Felix is totally one of the clones.
Yes.
And then Felix says to Sarah, Art has somebody downstairs who wants to meet her sisters. And it's like, yay, there's going to be all the clones together, except Rachel, yes, of course. And
she doesn't count.
She doesn't really count, does she? Yeah. So best scene of Orphan Black ever is this scene. Would you agree? Yes or no? Or the most
we'll go
loving
with. Yes, most loving, most complicated technical level, like from an artistic standpoint, I'm sure the planning between it all, yes, for sure. Because Helena comes in and meets Cosima and Allison in ways that very much identify them as a person.
Yes.
You know, Allison's very proper and polite. Cosima is very Cosima.
Yeah, that's where Cosima says to Helena, you're very beautiful to Helena, which nobody has said all along.
Ever.
Probably ever. And then Helena says, I like your hairs.
Yes, which was so cute. And then Kira gets to see Auntie Helena too, which was so, so happy, so much love.
And Helena says, there, I came back to see your little face.
Yeah.
And so, so cute. Adorable. Yeah. And then you see a turntable. Cosima puts on some music. Everybody else is sitting on the couches and stuff. And she puts on some Rasta music. It's actually called Water Prayer Rasta Mix by Adam Shaikh. And I will put a link to the show notes to that. And Cosima starts dancing. And then I'm actually moving in my seat now. Like, I can't even think about it without, like, swaying a little bit. Like, Cosima starts dancing. And then Felix comes up to Cosima and they're kind of dancing together. You know, what did you think? I don't want to spoil the whole.
So, I mean, you sent me, I mean, it's so great. The technicality, all of it. It's so cute to see them all dancing. And you sent me the videos of some behind the scenes. I went down a deep, dark YouTube hole watching that.
Yeah.
Trying to be as careful as I could about not spoiling. Mm-hmm. And I think I did okay. The one, it did bother me with Helena's hair, though, because it was very obviously, like, pasted in. Mm-hmm. The lighting and the way that the, like, outline cut of the video for Helena's hair really threw me off.
Oh, I didn't you know me.
Which is the first time that something like that has happened with Orphan Black. Mm-hmm. It hasn't really affected me significantly. And so that was a little bit, it kept distracting me because anytime Helena was on screen, that's all I could end up seeing. But I loved the fact that Felix got even Allison up and dancing and just like, it was very sweet. It was very sweet. And then it goes into a really neat episode or section where Sarah and Cosima are sharing the bed and they do like some hand interplay that was beautifully done. I thought that was really well, really well done. And Sarah goes, what are you thinking of? And Cosima goes, Funk Master Fuller and Sacred Geometry. And I was just like, okay, that's so Cosima.
Buckminster Fuller.
Oh, sorry. It's okay. Buckminster Fuller and Sacred Geometry. I didn't have my...
No, but I like Funkmaster Fuller because that's his, that's his DJ name.
Perfect. And so they're talking about sacred geometry, which is one of the tattoos that Cosima has.
Right.
And talks about just all of that. And you can tell Sarah is so sad about Cosima dying. And they got to keep moving forward. And like, just this very meaningful, heartfelt section. Which affected my reaction in the future, in a future scene. But as they're talking, Helena is like getting ready. She has, she pulls out her babies in the tub, I guess. And she leaves. She has Jesse's hat and leaves. And it looks like she leaves her babies with her sisters.
I think she does, because
Okay, I
was thinking about that too. I'm like, I don't think they abduct her with the babies,
because I saw both of her hands, and so I was like, I'm pretty sure they don't, she doesn't have them with her, so she's leaving them with her family. And two thugs come and steal her. Poor Helena keeps getting kidnapped and taken away, but she drops the hat, she drops Jesse's hat, so at least they'll be able to know, hopefully they'll know that she was kidnapped, not just left the way that she normally would. And so now we go to Sarah. It's the next day, and she's in a limo, and she's pulling up to this gigantic mansion. So huge. And then we go back to Felix's apartment, and Kira comes to bring Cosima a book to read to her, and she's not waking up. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. After the meaningful moments between Sarah and Cosima the night before, of course she's dead. Like, of course. Like, this is hard. I'm like, oh wait, nope, she's not actually dead. Thank goodness.
It really was like, I don't remember myself watching that the first time, but even this time I was like, I know she's not dead, but I'm a little worried right now. And then I thought, oh, Kathy totally thinks she's dead. I bet.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah. So her eye, I mean, Kira shakes her quite a bit. It's really is quite disturbing. And then her eyes open a little bit, and then Kira asks her, you know, to read her a story, and they read a book. It's just, I don't, tell me if I'm getting out of order though here. They read a book, and then, then Kira says, I have another book. And it's Island of Dr. Moreau. And that's when Cosima says Island of Dr. Moreau with all the annotations and formulas and sketches that Dr. Duncan had added to it.
Yeah. And we also see Sarah at the mansion, with the little girl who's playing hide and go seek, and Marion comes down and invites Charlotte to visit, to meet the visitor. And Charlotte has a brace on her leg, and she's the same age as Kira, and it just like, what is going on? And we learn Marion is the monitor, but she calls herself the mother, officially adopted Charlotte. She's the only survivor of the second batch
of Lita clones.
Of Lita clones.
Yeah.
The second Sarah's.
Like 400 attempts, which just sounds horrible. So
that's so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But one survived, so that's good.
Like Finding Nemo.
Yeah. And we learn a little bit more about Topside.
Yes.
Which is who Marion works for. Yeah. And they kind of steer Dyad Institute.
Yeah.
So now we've got another layer on top of the other layer.
Yeah.
On, like, it's all
One of the things that cracked me up the most is where, when Marion's saying, like, we, you know, put people on boards of things, we steer these, we steer through other companies, and and Sarah says, you're a cabal, and Marion goes, yes.
Yeah, just plain and simple.
We're a cabal. You know, we're securing a monopoly on genetic engineering because we think this is the future, is clearly where the future's going. Then she explains to her, you know, there's another agenda, though, that your mother, she keeps referring to Siobhan as Sarah's mother, which she is, I mean, her foster mother. Anyway, so she says there's another agenda. She said the military never shut down Project Lita, but it was divided into two. Dyad got the female clones, and the military had the males. And this is Project Castor. Okay, and all the while they're going to this, like, place in the humongous house. It's like a basement kind of prison, but it's really like a glass wall, not bars. And this is like the end where just you get all kinds of creepy feelings because you're like, what is Project Castor? And she sees the guy who's presumably a clone, and she says, I know him. And she recognizes him because he's identical to Mark, who had tried to abduct her in the first episode of this season. Meanwhile, they're showing.
Yes, but you don't see that yet. Right. You just see the back of his head. Yeah. And then it cuts to Mrs. S. and Paul in a vehicle watching Helena get dragged onto the plane. And one of the guys pulls off his hood, and it's Mark.
It's Mark in a military outfit with, like, a, you know, one of those berets.
Yeah. Yes, and it then flashes back to Sarah watching.
Well, then there's Mark and Gracie. It flashes back to them. Actually,
getting married.
They're getting married. They're in a chapel by themselves with a priest, and they're saying wedding vows. And at that moment, the soundtrack becomes Nearer, My God, to Thee. And that's what they're playing through all of this, like, we're at the church, now we're at the airstrip, now we're back in Marion's house. You know, so this creepy hymn, I mean, it's not necessarily a creepy hymn, but it's used in so many creepy places.
Right.
is the background of, yes, you see Mark getting married, you see the Castor clone in the military uniform, and then this guy turns around staring at Sarah. Super crazy looking.
Yeah.
Super crazy looking. And Sarah's like, eyes are very big. And that's the end.
Right? Yeah. And it just is just like, what?
Yeah.
What did I just watch? And like I told you earlier, the last line in my notes is, OMG, the clone is Mark. Mark is a clone, OMG, with a lot of exclamation points, because I was not expecting that at all.
It's the new batch.
Yes. And the whole Castor part makes so much more sense. And yeah, it's hardcore.
Yeah. So I read that the creators, Graham Mason and John Fawcett, wanted to have a male clone, you know, but they hadn't decided in advance, like from season one, who was going to be it, right?
Ooh.
But eventually they decided on that guy. Ari Mullen is the name of the actor. And he, I think, I don't know how they couldn't have picked him from the beginning, because he does have that kind of face that can be, like, really straight or really crazy. I mean, you know, it's acting, but I couldn't see Felix being the clone, you know, and I couldn't see Art being the clone. Paul, of course, is like a clone. He's a G.I. Joe, but he'd be the only one. He'd be the only one I'd be like, of course, it's Paul, because they'd make him perfect.
Right. Yeah. But it's, yeah, such a great way to end the episode and the season again. Yeah. Like, it's just, so good. So good.
I'm glad that you liked it a lot. Sounds like I liked it a lot. So there's a couple of little things that stuck out to me just now that I've watched it, you know, through this episode through, and, you know, we've watched season one not that long ago. A little inconsistency with the clone dance scene, you know, not from a technical point of view, but from a character point of view, is, do you remember the episode in season one where Helena cuts off the tail of that scary icky guy? Do you remember
that?
Yeah,
that was kind of scarred for life.
Do you remember how that episode ends?
Nope.
She goes into the Neolution Club, and she's dancing, and she's holding the tail. And she can dance.
Oh, yeah.
So it's weird that Helena has this, like, you know, Elaine Benes style, you know, from Seinfeld, of dancing in the clone dance party, because she could dance as well as Cosima or Sarah in that,
yeah,
in that episode. So whatever. I still love the clone dance party. You cannot ruin it for me. But
nope.
I do love, and Kira's in the dance party too. You know, she's.
Yes.
They didn't have her dancing with all the clones. That would have just been one technical thing too far.
Yeah. What they, one of the bits that I then.
Oh, you watched.
Watched was like how they had Felix added in.
Yeah.
And so there's a couple bits. Anytime he's dancing with a different clone, he's. The bit before he's like hopped off stage, off camera, to come back in. And the one where he's leaving, I think when he's leaving Allison, is so funny because he goes from the middle of the screen to the far, like, stage right, like, exit. And, like, it was. I didn't notice it at all watching the episode. And now if I was to go back and watch it again, I would never not see it because it's so, such an obvious, like, whoosh, like, yeah, it was so funny. But yeah, it was super good. It was so good.
Yeah. So, well, that wraps up season two of Orphan Black on Sestercast.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this. I can't believe we made it through season two. I hope you enjoyed our conversations about it and that you stay tuned for the next season. We're definitely going to be hopping on that sooner rather than later. You can find us online at theincomparable.com/sestercast. Or just go straight to sestercast.com. That will take you over to the Incomparable Network. We are all on Twitter at Sestercast is the podcast as a whole, or you can talk to us individually. Jean is at MacGenie and I am at Mrs. Soup. Thank you again so much for listening, and we hope you have an absolutely fantastic day.